Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're doing well. I'm Reinhard Wolf, sitting in for Henrik Palmgren, and you're listening to Red Eyes Radio. Henrik has been quite busy lately working to get the new members website up and running, so be on the lookout for that in the near future. Our guest for today is Jazz Hands McFeels. Jazz Hands is the main host of Fash the Nation, a popular alt-right podcast focused on American politics. In this show, Jazz Hands and I will be discussing the DACA program, which the Trump administration recently decided to end. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Jazz Hands, welcome to Red Ice. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Reinhard. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So it's only Wednesday, but this week has already proven to be quite eventful, hasn't it?
It has. There have been, the narrative continues to kind of unfold. I had one theory when we got word on Sunday, I think, that this was coming. And that theory has now evolved into some other things. So, yeah, it's kind of gotten interesting.
Definitely. Yeah, so the main topic of our show today is going to be Trump's recent decision to end DACA. But I think we should first start off with kind of a basic history of the program for some of our listeners who may or may not have been interested in politics when, or may not even have been adults back when DACA came about. So why don't you kind of walk us through the history? I believe it was June 15th in 2012 when Obama announced DACA, correct?
Yeah, and he did so right in the middle of the election cycle. And this was in the primary was still going on. I'm a little bit foggy on the history, but I was still a basic bitch Republican actively working in Washington, D.C. at that point. And it was something that he tried to do through Congress. And as you know, for those of you out in Rio Rhinelander, Congress, Republicans won historical number of seats in 2010, and so they took control of Congress from the Democrats in the 2010 election. So that Congress was in place at that point, and they tried to do some kind of amnesty. There were some things going on there, and Obama basically, this is a voter registration drive en masse for the Democrats, and he did this right before. He wanted Mitt Romney not to, essentially. They wanted him to push him further to the right on this issue because he still had to play to the base. It was a good strategy. But when Congress refused to do this, Obama took matters into his own hands and showed the public, and I think this is one of the reasons why he was reelected, because Hispanics came out, they saw that he was willing to kind of do what leaders in their countries do, which is basically make unilateral decisions on things like this. And he put in this executive order essentially saying if you came into the country as a minor before a certain date, you could apply for a rolling permit essentially to work and go to school and to stay here, but you're stuck in limbo. You can't apply for a green card, though we found out that 45,000 of these 800,000 have. A number of those, subset of that number, have actually gotten citizenship. So this program, obviously, was just designed to kind of keep them there. And then eventually they would eventually be able to get green cards. I mean, that was the idea, that some Congress at some point in time, as they probably planned under Hillary Clinton, that's who they thought was going to win the election, that they would then legalize these DACA recipients. There's another program that was killed by Trump earlier a few months ago that was for the parents of these children. So that's kind of the history. And the interesting thing is as soon as this EO was enacted, the Obama administration was all but busing people across the border. I mean, the moment these people came in, I mean, they just flooded the border because essentially – they were just letting anybody in who could apply for who could fit the parameters of this EO. And it wasn't just people from Mexico. It was people from Central America. It was people from all over the place. And so when Republicans go out there and they say, you know, the Dreamers came here through no fault of their own. Yes, it was their fault. Many of them knew exactly what they were being brought here for. And this is like, if you go back and Google unaccompanied minors border crossings, like, you'll see this was going on. This was an intentional program to continue to subvert the democracy in the United States. So that is where we are today. My opinion at this point, given what Trump has done in the last 72 hours, is they should have let the court strike this down and hot potatoed this into Congress with no sunset period. It ends immediately and begin deporting them. I mean, that's what they should have done. My theory on Sunday to Tuesday, Sessions announced, was that they were doing this to set up cucks in Congress. But now Trump has kind of come out through his own words and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, saying that he would probably sign some kind of a reform package, which could only mean that they want to legalize these people in some way. I don't know what concessions he hopes to get. I don't really know, but this is shitty. This is not who we elected, and that's kind of where I'm at today. So,
one of the things that I found interesting about Obama passing this through under an executive order was that he did so, as you said, was towards the end of his first term. So he wasn't sure if he was going to even be in office, in under a year. So it seems to me like, yeah, he really just wanted to get this through one way or another, even if he wasn't going to be in there. Cause he figured, if, who was it, Mitt Romney, got in and he didn't, then, Romney probably wouldn't undo it. So.
Well, that's the interesting thing, is that Mitt Romney, especially like how things have changed now, he seems like the most likely person who would continue something like DACA. And it's crazy, like, I mean, I understand Obama's play here, and especially because, like, you have to remember, like I was saying, in 2010, Republicans won these historic victories. The momentum was totally against the Democratic Party. DACA was, like I said, it was a Democratic registration drive. It was like, we need to, like, blow some life into the base and get them excited about something, because they passed health care over 2 years prior to this. Mitt Romney was, America wanted a white, kind of a white president again. They wanted to move back to the right. And Mitt Romney was the guy at the time. I hated Mitt Romney, and I think most people in our camp did. Remember, his policy on immigration was let people self-deport. But that, of course, hinged upon a DHS and policies that would have been rigorously against Mexicans. And so, Mitt Romney with big business and cheap labor, there's no way that these people would self-deport. In fact, you probably would see that border crossings would have gone up under a President Romney, and he probably would have worked out some gang of eight bill with little Marco and all those people. And yeah, DACA would have been law. So,
I think the self-deporting thing only really works when you remove the incentives for them to come here. But I imagine Mitt Romney's plan would, keep the incentive there. Who knows, maybe even add new incentives. And, while he speaks about, self-deporting and all of that.
Yep.
Well, okay, I think you kind of covered this to an extent, but just so that we do kind of get all the details out there, why don't you kind of tell us how exactly DACA works?
Okay, so essentially the way DACA works is there is a, in the history I was talking about, there's a group of people, immigrants, illegal immigrants, who came here as children, but that applies to someone who's up to 14 and a half years old. So a lot of these, kids, these unaccompanied minors, they're able to essentially apply for work permits, the ability to go to school, but they're not legal permanent residents. And under the rules, they can't leave the country and come back in because they don't have a U.S. passport. But many of them have been able to achieve this. And part of the program is every 2 years they have to reapply. And they do have to meet some standards, but the loopholes have just been so obscene. And as we've seen, like 45,000 getting green cards. And the green card is really the ticket, because once you get a green card, then you can start applying and doing the chain migration, bringing, you know, your cousins and your grandma and, like, all these people. And so over the course of a generation, a single person with a green card, especially in these families that have lots of children and lots of extended family and everybody's kind of in some way related in these towns that they're coming from, they're, over the course of a generation, one person is bringing in 40, 50, 60 people. I mean, where does, you know, the sky's the limit. So 800,000 very quickly becomes millions and millions of people. And, you know, you have people out there making the argument that it's not constitutional. A lot of cucks are doing that. Some cucks are not even making that argument. Like John Kasich is just saying, like, you have a home in Ohio. Like,
right, so, right. They've completely dispensed with the Constitution argument, and now it's totally social justice.
Yeah, it's totally social justice. And, I mean, even Paul Ryan has said, you know, this is grossly unconstitutional. You have Lindsey Graham saying Trump did the right thing. So you have some people willing to go that far. But then they want to give these people rights and entitlements and allow them to do the chain migration. That would be stopped with the RAISE Act because of the way Cotton's bills work. It wouldn't allow for the chain migration to continue, especially with these people. But essentially, what the announcement that Sessions made on Tuesday morning did was they are not going to continue renewing these applications, and some will be they will all begin to expire at some point, and they're not going to renew them. So essentially, deportations will begin in 6 months, and they could begin for, I guess, people who are found to have committed crimes prior to that. But he's given Congress right up until spring, which is really right in the middle of primary season, to fix this. So I don't, you know, it's pretty frustrating because he's also advocating for them to put something on his desk, which to me means he's interested in signing something. Now, thinking this through, of course, he can't do this whole charade where he says, I'm going to kick this to Congress. Immigration has to be done through the legislature. I'll sign something if I agree with it, and we'll move forward. But if he signs DACA, if he legalizes DACA, that's political suicide. He's finished. So I don't know what he has in mind here. I don't know what kind of concessions he thinks he's going to get for DACA. But, I mean, I'm kind of not even in a place right now where I would even, if I were in his shoes, I would even consider concessions for this, because it's no excuse. They all have to go back.
Yeah, absolutely. So Donald Trump tweeted yesterday around 6 p.m. that Congress now has 6 months to legalize DACA, something the Obama administration was unable to do. If they can't, I will revisit this issue. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on that tweet? It's kind of, it seems like we're getting mixed messages from, you know, various parts of the Trump administration.
Yeah, and this is where I pivoted toward, like, strategic blackpilling last night. And for right now, it's strategic. Like, he has to feel fire from the base. Otherwise, he's going to feel comfortable taking some deal on DACA because he doesn't hear anything, doesn't feel anything. And now Congress is getting a lot of phone calls. But my original theory, starting on Sunday when we heard this was going to happen, all the way up until that tweet, was he's setting up cucks to fail, and he may still be doing this. I don't know. I would like to believe that he's setting cucks up to fail right ahead of the primary season so that they all have to vote on something that is grossly unpopular with the broad subset of people who voted for him in America. And I think that would be the ultimate best play. Honestly, I think they should have just let the court strike it down, let the chips fall where they may. But also to have a long, protracted battle where Congress just looks even more stupid than they already do, arguing about this and pissing off the base even more. I mean, Trump's biggest enemies are cucks in Congress. And so that kind of a strategy is good, but only if the end result is no DACA and cucks being badly injured from this fight. If the end result is DACA and then concessions for things that we're going to get anyway, then this is a bullshit play. I don't understand that. So when I saw that tweet, I was like, okay, How could your play be to set up cucks in Congress if you're going to give them an out anyway, meaning in 6 months I'll revisit this? Like, that doesn't sit well with me, and that's what I got kind of angry about, and I put out a tweet directly at President Trump, and I said, you know, if you do anything that involves any concessions from Democrats, like, it's political suicide, you'll lose support from your base. That will be over. And if you look at tweets from him in 2013, he himself said that any form of amnesty is suicide for the GOP. Same rules apply in 2017, let me tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, amnesty is just wildly unpopular among the, you know, the Republican base. I wish we could say the same for the GOP, but that's just kind of where we are at this point. So we have 6 months until DACA is supposed to end. What is the DACA program going to look like until then? I saw that they're not going to be accepting new applications, which is, clearly kind of a bare minimum. But what else is the program going to be like until then?
Well, they're not going to be accepting new applications. The ones that are expiring will expire. And then at that point, like, let's say you have a deferral that expires on October 1st. Well, then you officially become, I mean, these people are illegal anyway, but in the terms of the legal understanding of it, they become illegal at that point. And as we pointed out, if you're illegal in the country, that qualifies as criminality, and therefore you're deportable under the rules of the Trump administration. So it's conceivable that as some of these people start to roll off of DACA, they would be deportable. Whether or not they get deported, I don't know. But nothing has stopped the Trump administration so far from deporting people who have only broken immigration law, and that has happened precipitously. So,
yeah, I think it remains to be seen, obviously. One thing that I've learned in, you know, just kind of politics, but more specifically with regards to Donald Trump, is you just kind of have to wait and see. That doesn't mean that it's not warranted to become, you know, to kind of sound the alarm or, voice your concern over certain things. But, 6 months is somewhat of a long time. I suppose anything could happen then. But, I don't think there's any point in being too black-pilled or too white-pilled until, things kind of develop a little bit more.
Yeah, I think some people have their finger right on the trigger. I've been taking friendly fire for a long time because some people think I'm too white-pilled. And I do get black-pilled about certain things, but you'll notice, like, whenever I get angry or kind of go on the attack, it's usually because of words that have come directly from Donald Trump. But if I go into some of these groups, I see people getting upset about things that an aide was briefed on by someone else, anonymous, who attended the deal meeting with Schumer and Nancy Pelosi today. And they were quoting this aide who had been briefed by someone who doesn't have a name who attended the meeting about what Trump said in that meeting. And the quote from the article was essentially that he was willing to do some kind of deal. He said, "We discussed that also today. Chuck and Nancy would like to see something happen, and so do I," Trump said. "And I said, if we can get something to happen, we're going to sign it, and we're going to make a lot of happy people." That's the thing. Like, if Trump himself said that on Twitter, it would be a reason to get upset and very frustrated because it's obviously cucking. But how many times have we heard someone say something that someone said that turns out to be bullshit? And so when I read, you know, especially from an aide who was briefed by an anonymous person who may or may not have been in the meeting, we don't really know. And we know that the media likes to blackpill the base. Because if the base isn't making phone calls to Congress because they're angry and they've just tuned out and turned off, then Congress just feels like they can act. Trump isn't going to be hearing anything from us. So we have to be vigilant. I think, you know, it's going to be a long 6 months, but I think we can't let up because they are calling Congress to tell them to do this as well, to act on DACA and make it permanent. So...
So I oftentimes see people referring to DACA recipients as dreamers, but the Dream Act is something separate, right?
Right. This is another, you know, this is another, this is very common in politics, but this is another, the Dream Act failed, and then Obama did DACA, and that's kind of how that worked out. And there's a new Dream Act of 2017 proposed by Lindsey Graham-nesty on July 20th, and that is the bill I think they're going to try to vote on. I see him and Durbin are out there pushing it. The Bridge Act died in committee, so that's basically dead, but not to say that it won't be revived. But yes, Dreamers got their name essentially from a failed bill, and then they just decided, you know, it's just one of those things in politics where they you know, Republicans sometimes get creative with it, like when they came up with that gun silencer legislation and they called it the Hearing Protection Act of 2017. So, you know, you just got to get creative with some of these words. But these people are not dreamers. You know, these are illegal immigrants.
Right. Right.
Many of whom were brought here by, you know, people with the intent to subvert our country. So.
Yeah, so I think people on the right should definitely stop referring to them as dreamers, because it's incorrect. It refers to a different program, different bill. And B, yeah, like the Hearing Protection Act, the very term dreamer is supposed to evoke a certain emotional response that is beneficial to those who want to push for amnesty. So, yeah, these people are illegals. They're not undocumented. They're not dreamers. They are illegal.
Illegal unaccompanied minors. I mean, we have to come up with our own meme for them. You know, we can call them illegals. We can call them whatever you want. But yeah, we have to come up with a different meme for referring to this specific group of people.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Bridge Act a little bit. That was killed. I believe it was yesterday. But when I woke up yesterday, I saw everyone on all of my. On Twitter, on Discord, on Slack, everyone is freaking out about the Bridge Act. So why don't you kind of give us the rundown on what that was and what could have happened if it went through?
So the Bridge Act essentially is something that would have made it possible for people who kind of meet certain requirements to apply for and receive provisional, as they word it, provisional protected presence and work authorization. However, the applicant... it's only valid at the time that the person received it, and it's only good for 3 years. Essentially, it's basically like a longer, more dragged out version of DACA with like higher requirements on it. And, you know, once they've been around for a while, then they could eventually apply for, it's like slow walking amnesty, essentially what it is. That's why they call it the Bridge Act. It's a bridge between DACA and getting a green card. And essentially it's something that cucks would love to have. And of course they say, oh, but you have to prove that you've learned to speak English. Well, how do you do that? You know, you can't be a felon. Well, those are the rules of DACA as it is right now. How are you going to stop felons from getting through loopholes? It's just a bullshit bill.
Yeah.
And it's dead because people know that it's a bullshit bill. So
good. Well, it sounds like we dodged a bullet there. What you were just saying about you know, criminality among the DACA recipients. I saw an article today that the percentage of the number of DACA recipients who have lost their status due to gang activity has increased by 30% this year alone, I believe. So the idea that all of these right, the idea that all of these people are you know, just dreamers. They're you know, Hispanic, straight A students who are, you know, going to become doctors and lawyers. It's not entirely accurate. I think that statistic alone is pretty funny. Just the idea that Donald Trump, like, coming into office, just forced like a ton of these people to just like start joining gangs left and right. You never know, right? It's that's when you're thinking about what could have happened in the past year to really set off that increase. Well, it's Trump, right?
Yeah, well, I just think it's so funny because they say, you know, these people come here, these are supposed to be the best of the best, right? They're kids who, quote-unquote, kids who don't have any kind of felony offenses. They were brought here through no fault of their own. All they want to do is go to college and get a job. And, you know, that's all they want to do. These are supposed to be the best of the best. And yet when they come to what some may call the greatest country in the world, and I'm still a patriotic American, just a 1950s America, these people still join a fucking gang. Like, how hard is this to not understand, right? Like, this process of, you know, there's no magic soil here. When you bring the third world in, they bring the third world with them. So this is not, you know, this is pretty simple to understand. I read a statistic today. I don't know if it's true or not. Somebody was in my timeline on Twitter saying there was not just the gang activity, but there was an ungodly number of them that have ended up committing felonies once they've gotten here, too. And I'm sure, you know, membership in gangs kind of goes hand in hand.
Yeah, you think so. But, yeah, and it's not terribly surprising that some of these DACA recipients would, you know, be involved in felonies, even if they're not, you know, directly involved in the gang. Because, you know, not all of them have the initiative to really kind of, you know, take it to the next level and join a gang. A lot of them are satisfied to just kind of, you know, go out and commit felonies unaffiliated with, you know, MS-13 or the Crips or whatever else.
Yeah, it's and that's the problem, and they're gonna, the biggest issue here is the chain migration, and unfortunately it's difficult because I don't think Congress has the will to even put forward the Tom Cotton bill, the RAISE Act. He's pushing this, you know, we should have DACA go with the RAISE Act, and of course you had Schumer out there today saying Donald Trump better give us a clean DACA bill and we're going to attach it to all these other things. And it's like, well, yeah, of course. Like, he wants a clean DACA bill first, or he's going to attach it to a whole bunch of Democratic bullshit. But in no way are the Democrats ever going to support something like Tom Cotton. And the other thing is, all the there's so many Republicans out there, especially the House Freedom Caucus, who are not going to support a Tom Cotton bill. So we don't even have the will to legalize Dreamers and say that they can't do chain migration after they come in. Like, that's it. Like, we don't even have the political will to do that. So I don't know. That's why, this is why I'm getting angry. It's like, there never should have been given a six-month window. Now, I read that Dick Morris piece out there today, and of course, you know, because of who Dick Morris is, like, he thinks this is a brilliant strategy because, you know, like everybody else, including me, has been saying, this would be great to set up the cucks. Trump knows that they're going to just engage in gridlock and fail again and force a DACA vote, essentially amnesty right before the midterms. But Dick Morris framed it as a win for Trump if Congress actually worked something out and put a bill on his desk. That's not a win for Trump. So the only win, like I've been saying, is one in which we end up with no DACA. Now, I might, if I were President Trump, I might take birthright citizenship. Like, if we're going to LARP here for a second, I might take birthright citizenship, $40 billion for the wall, and maybe even tack on, like, funding to maintain it for fucking 50 years or something. But, like, we have to get pretty crazy with, like, the deal-making in order for me to accept 800,000 people with no chain migration and a whole bunch of other things attached to it. But it's really tough for me to say that, like, under any circumstances I would accept this. So,
yeah, I think there's a tendency among perhaps people who are a little less politically experienced or aware to just, if they don't see Trump doing everything that he wants or that they want right away, that he's cucking or that he's weak. But I mean, the reality of politics in the American system as it is now is that Trump has to make deals. He has to make concessions. He needs Congress to fund things and so forth. So, I mean, what percentage of, well, not percentage, but, you know, to what extent do you think Trump is, do you think he's doing everything he can within, like, a realistic framework? Or do you think he's kind of, you know, being a little low energy.
I think he's, I don't think he's being low energy. I just think for a guy who hates the media to the extent that he does, he seems to be awfully affected by them. And you can see it, like, unfolding in real time yesterday with the tweets. I mean, there were a couple tweets before the one at 6 p.m. Where he was a little bit more shrewd about, like, you know, this is what we're doing and I'm sticking to it. And then, you know, as the media, you know, right around, what was it, 6 p.m. So as, like, cable news starts to kick off and, you know, he's, well, I'm sure, watching TV because I know this is not a meme that he does this. Then he starts to say, like, oh, well, Congress better do this, but if they don't, then maybe I'll do something else about it. It's like, come on, dude. Like, why? But then I go back to the other side. It's like, all right, this guy's supposed to be a master deal maker, like you were saying earlier in the show. You just have to have patience with him and things kind of work out. Like, we thought he was going to cuck during the campaign on some issue, and it turned out that he didn't. And so I've kind of exercised a lot more patience with him. But when a Republican starts to veer off in this direction, like, it's a foregone conclusion what's about to happen. So, you know, forgive me for being a little naive there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know, regarding Trump's, you know, concern for the media's opinion on him, that is something that Ann Coulter brought attention to. I think it was during the first few weeks of the Trump administration. I could be wrong on the exact date there, but she basically wrote an article talking about how if Trump caves and starts looking for validation from the media, then that's just kind of pretty much be the end of his presidency, because A, he's not going to do what he promised to do, and B, he's never going to get the media to love him, so he's not going, you know, he's not going to get anything out of it. And she cited an interesting example of George Bush Sr., who campaigned on not raising taxes, and then the media was relentless in attacking him for having taxes be too low, and then he finally caved and he raised taxes, and then the media just started attacking him for, you know, doing the opposite of what he said, even though that's what they wanted him to do. So I think that is a good example, and perhaps one that Trump should keep in mind when he's trying to be, you know, respectable and do, you know, please the media. Also, I mean, you're right. He does really care about the media, how they see him, because you remember his good statement on Charlottesville, the one where he, you know, deviated from the script and what his aides wanted him to say, and he, you know, pretty much spoke from the heart. He did that because the media didn't like his first one. He was upset that they didn't like his first statement. Then he was like, well, you know what? So it does show that they do have somewhat of a sway over him, which, you know, it's unideal, and perhaps, you know, a few more months or years of getting bashed by the media and he'll finally, you know, just play to his base and you know, stop caring.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, he does watch a lot of television. He pays attention to a lot of what is being said about him, and it, you know, I think he, unfortunately, he's thirsty for a win, and I think he's going to look at, which would be a mistake. I'll say it again: it would be political suicide to accept legalized DACA recipients for some minor concessions from Democrats, or Republicans for that matter, and that's all that he's going to get, and then say, oh, we have this great victory, we've done immigration reform, and I know that that's not all of what he wants to do, because he's even said himself in a number of places, you know, the political winds are not blowing in the direction that I want to do the immigration reform that I want to do right now, maybe sometime down the road. So this DACA thing, because of these 9 state attorneys general that wanted to sue, they're the ones that imposed this deadline on Tuesday. That's why Sessions and Trump, you know, they made this announcement, because they threatened to sue. They may still sue. So I think it's going to go down anyway, and I think it kind of forced him into talking about immigration without going full-blown reform the way that he wants to do it. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I don't know what his intent is. It's tough to read right now. He seems to kind of want to please the media and say we're going to make a big beautiful deal, and then I don't know. I mean, what will he do when a bill makes it to his desk? So,
yeah, it almost seems as if he wants a sense of closure and to be able to say, yeah, I have done immigration reform, and have that be like an achievement, regardless of the content of the immigration bill. But yeah, I mean, as we kind of agreed earlier, we'll have to wait and see, and we should, you know, speak up and voice our concerns when we feel that he's veering in the wrong direction. But we shouldn't, I mean, before things are settled, we shouldn't, you know, give in to despair. I see quite a lot of that on Twitter whenever the slightest bad thing, you know, happens. But yeah, I mean, keeping morale up is kind of a timeless problem that people in all sorts of endeavors have grappled with. So it's definitely not going anywhere.
Well, the best part will be when he doesn't cuck on this, and then you'll have the thousands of people saying they told you so, and they knew this was going to happen all along.
Right, after they delete a few tweets from a while back.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Politics are very interesting in the age of Twitter. It's really cool to be able to tap into just where, you know, the public consensus is, or even, you know, the consensus among, you know, the different factions of the American political landscape. And I think that does play out to our advantage as well, because Trump is, you know, he doesn't have to rely on polls. He doesn't have to rely on, you know, news stories and stuff. He can see on Twitter when there is outrage over something he's done. I think during the campaign, I believe it was, he said something about, you know, something positive or about keeping H-1B visas. And then there was a massive storm on Twitter from his supporters, you know, probably led by alt-right accounts, talking about how that was a terrible mistake. And then I think that very night he released a statement clarifying, like, oh, wait, no, actually I'm not. Did I say I liked H-1Bs? I don't like H-1Bs. So, yeah, it's, I mean, we...
Yeah.
Yeah, we shouldn't, I mean, each one of us might feel, you know, we don't have like, you know, millions of Twitter followers or anything, but, you know, we do have the ability to kind of direct, you know, a large degree of outrage on Twitter. And, you know, people who are close with Trump do follow some alt-right accounts. I'm not going to name who, but, I mean, when we do kind of, you know, speak our minds and you know, there's enough of us doing it on the internet, essentially, you know, it's obvious that it gets to him, so we should definitely keep doing that, but again, not veer off into, you know, black pill territory.
Yeah, I mean, I'd really like to pick Steve Bannon's brain on this, and I mean, he's not going to be interviewed on any even in the cable news. They haven't really interviewed him much. I don't think he really wants to talk to them.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to see what he had to say about, well, you guys knew that DACA was eventually going to become an issue in the administration. What was the game plan? What had you discussed, or what did you have in mind? Or even just ask Bannon, what would you do in this situation? How would you deal with this? And just get his take. I'd be really interested to see what. And of course, he would never do this, so I'm kind of wishing for this, but. What he thought Trump actually believed on this, and that would be kind of a pretty satisfying answer. So,
well, who knows? Maybe Steve Bannon will go on Fash the Nation someday after we have the ethnostate, and then you guys can talk about what his plan was for this. But yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to kind of know where he really stands, because obviously Steve Bannon does make statements, and he does express himself and through various mediums. But, you know, for people like that who are clearly perhaps a bit more right-wing or radical than they let on, you're kind of left guessing. And that's part of the reason why the left hates him, too, because he said enough about certain issues, you know, demographics and you know, preserving American culture and so forth, that the left does get that, too. They do know that he is far more radical than he lets on. But yeah, so would you say you're overall optimistic on the trajectory of the Trump administration?
Yeah, well, aside from what may come of this, Very optimistic. Things have been going really well. I mean, you're getting money for the wall. The activities going on at Department of Homeland Security and ICE specifically have been extremely white-pilling. Just the ongoing deportations and everything else that's been going on. That stuff has been going really well. The Voter Integrity Commission underway, finding fraud. I mean, there's been a lot of really great white pills. And like when I go on Fash the Nation to talk about white pills and things that are happening, I am coming from a place where I think they're objectively good. I'm not out there doing this to like make people feel good. I'm doing it because I feel good about it, and I think it's a good thing. And if I'm going to go black pill on something, it's because there are relevant prevailing trends that indicate that things could go down the shitter. And so I try to be a pretty good weather vane about where things are going, and you know, it's just one of those things. I think, you know, if Hillary Clinton had become the president of the United States, the alternate timeline and of how radically different things would have been if she were president, I mean, it's just unbelievable to think about right now, like what would happen. I mean, we're already seeing what's going on with Google and Facebook and all these different companies essentially having more power than anybody really thought would be possible in this country. And just imagine what they would be doing with the full backing of the federal government, aside from just the deep state, and the things that she would be doing to punish the base, Donald Trump's base in the campaign, and all the things that led up to his election. I mean, it would just be absolutely insane. I'm very optimistic, all things considered. So,
yeah, I think it's good to kind of keep things in perspective when Trump isn't doing something we like or something doesn't work out as we would hope. We can always remember that there is a timeline on which Hillary Clinton is president, and that is a very grim, dark timeline that we are not on, thankfully. You know, everything that you just said is very true, and we should be thankful. I think we should definitely try to stay as optimistic as possible without becoming unrealistic, and without, we don't want to, you know, delve into the realm of just, yeah, like you said, making people feel good. We should be concerned with morale, but we should be rooted in reality when we're kind of assessing the situation.
Yeah, I think the tendency tends to be too much black pill, honestly. I think people kind of are like black-pilled before they are white-pilled, and then they're only white-pilled for a second before they fall back. And I think that's a lot of that is because you have one of the prevailing trends is the media, they benefit significantly from the base being black-pilled. And so that is the function of how things are working. People are paying attention to the media, seeing what's going on. Even if you understand like the dynamic of what's happening in the media, people are just inclined to go with first impressions, and then that kind of rules over them until they have something to counteract what they've heard that's substantial. And so it's tough. It's really tough. And, you know, we need all hands on deck. I mean, it doesn't mean that you have to be like thinking that everything's a white pill, but, you know, just taking it as things come, I guess.
Well, Jazz Hands, we should start wrapping up pretty soon here, but before we do, I wanted to kind of play devil's advocate for a minute and ask you if you think that there are any potential downsides to ending DACA. You know, the left and mainstream conservatives, Republicans, their biggest talking point other than the humanitarian nonsense is that it's generally economics, right? When you start talking to the liberals about immigration, they suddenly become libertarians. So do we have anything to worry about with regard to removing, you know, 800,000 people from the economy?
I think the biggest thing, I don't think there's any downside to that. I saw this guy, Jewish, of course, Simon Rosenberg or something was on TV this morning talking about using buzzwords like, you know, it's going to be so disruptive if we have 800,000 people leaving the jobs with these corporations. Who's going to hire? You know, it's like, yeah, dude, then there's going to be a fucking huge hiring spree, and the wages are going to have to be higher. Like, all the things that the left might want to point out as, like, ostensibly bad are actually good for everybody. And the worst thing that can happen, and I was saying this on James Alsop's live stream the other night, is that wages will go up as a result of this many people being deported from the country. There will be jobs available, wages will go up, and people will see the cause and effect of immigration being cut, either by people being deported or just by legal immigration being cut in general. And it's going to be very bad. And so, yes, I think there'll be a huge uproar if they start deporting Dreamers. It would be strategic to kind of deport them in kind of a trickle effect, I think, rather than kind of bussing everybody out, because it's just going to act, you know, you're going to have a lot of these shock troops activated. But I really think the left is kind of holding back for a bigger fight, which is kind of scary. Obama, I saw on the news yesterday, was going to make a statement, Obama's statement, imminent on Trump DACA. And it's like, then he just released a written press release, and the left was actually saying that Obama cucked. He, like, cucked his own people on not That's coming awesome. Out and making a speech, which is interesting. Well, it is awesome, but it's at the same time, it's like, this is a huge thing, right? Like, to the left, like, what are they holding back for?
That's a good point.
I also think maybe, like, these investigations are still underway, and we haven't heard much, and Obama potentially could be implicated in some of this, as well as people in his administration. So he's kind of keeping his head low, but I kind of think the black pill side of me is that they're keeping their powder dry, and for what, I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose we'll have to wait and see. Well, Jazz Hands, it's been nice talking to you. Before I let you go here, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you on the internet?
Sure. So my Twitter account is jmcfeels. Our website is fashthenation.com. But we are and have always been a part of therightstuff.biz. So you can really find the show on therightstuff.biz. And our show is prominently featured at the top of the webpage there. And if they want to donate, they can send donation to fashthenation@tutanota.com. And we also have a Facebook page if you want to follow that, Fashionation. You can check us out there. So,
all right, well, it was nice talking to you, and we'll have to have you on again here in the future.
Sure thing. Thanks. Great talking to you as well.